Franken and Catherine Lanfer on Seattle's Progressive Talk, AM 10.
Hey, welcome back to the Al Franken Show. I'm Al Franken.
I'm Catherine Lanfer, and sitting with us, of course, is Friday regular Joe Connison. We're continuing our conversation with Edward Klein, who has out the new biography, The Truth About Hillary, published by Sentinel.
And Ed, we want to give you a chance to kind of respond, because I think, you might get the feeling it's like three against one, but I got to tell you, Catherine just loves the book.
Well, it's good to know. Let me ask you a question, Joe.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Al.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
When you asked me on this program and spoke to my publisher,
yes,
did you tell them that Joe Connison was going to be on?
Yes.
You did, right? Nobody told me.
Well, your publisher should have told you, because I couldn't have emphasized it more. I said, you know, Joe, we must have discussed this. The publisher's name again is Adrian
Zackheim.
Zackheim. No. I discussed that at great length.
Good. Well, he didn't discuss it with me. But in any case, in the interest of full disclosure, don't you think you should tell your audience where Joe has stood on this book, what he's done up to now?
We talked about that last week.
In full disclosure, we have done that. We really
okay.
have.
Fine.
Yeah, and you know, he's not alone. There are critics of the book that are even, like John Podoritz on the right, writes, who's a conservative, he writes, "This is one of the most sordid volumes I've ever waded through. 30 pages into it, I wanted to take a shower. 60 pages into it, I wanted to be decontaminated. And 200 pages into it, I wanted someone to drive stakes through my eyes so I wouldn't have to suffer through another word." Now, this is a conservative, and I got to say that it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I've gotten, actually, I have to say, more positive mail from conservatives about my column about this book in The Observer than I have from right-wingers in a long time.
But I'm sorry that Adrian didn't tell you, because you should have known that, but that's really your publisher's fault.
Okay.
Okay.
And we were getting back to a question that was asked right before the break about just how conscious you were of putting deception in the book.
I don't believe there is deception in the book, and if I've left out, as I said in ellipses, I'm sorry. I certainly didn't intend to.
Okay. Let's talk about the FBI files that you talk about, sort of, you know, what was called Filegate, and you call it the purloined FBI files. And you write about it on page 39.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in a Salon interview, you said, like Nixon, Hillary has used FBI files against her enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know that she was absolved of this by the Office of Independent Counsel.
Well,
shouldn't you have written about that? Shouldn't you have given that information to your
It's still my belief and contention that Craig Livingston was responsible for taking those files, and that he was operating under direct orders from Hillary.
Do you know whose files those were? I mean, did you ever look at the names of the people whose files they were?
There were a lot of Republican
activists. They were not, actually. They were not. Can you name one Republican activist whose file was taken? One.
No, I couldn't do that.
You couldn't, because you haven't looked at the names. Did you ever look at the names?
No, I haven't.
Okay. You've never looked at the names, but you know there were a lot of Republican activists. How would you know that if you've never looked at the names?
I've read it in the New York Times and other
publications. Oh, no, you didn't. You did not. You did not.
Because, you know, because the
people whose names are on that list were former White House employees. Most of them were people like gardeners and janitors and people like, I've looked at every name on that
former
list.
Former, you know, White House employees.
That's correct.
In the previous Republican administration.
Oh, no, James Carville's name is on that list.
Well, yes, but there are many Republican officials on that list as well.
There were.
Are you saying there weren't?
No, I'm saying there were no Republican activists of any note on that list. If you look through that list, it's hundreds of names of people that you have never heard of and that the Republican Party had no significant connection to.
Okay.
And the fact is that those names were taken by mistake, which is what the Office of Independent Counsel determined, and that Mrs. Clinton never used them for any purpose. And you know what, Ed? If you'd done any reporting, you would know that. But you didn't even look at the list.
No, I haven't seen the list.
You didn't bother to look at the list.
Well, I didn't look at the list because I wasn't doing a book, Joe, on the list. I was doing that was one paragraph in a 300-page book, and it was a summary of what the charges, if you recall, were against her.
You've been going on, like, talking to in interviews, saying, like Nixon, Hillary has used FBI files against her enemies. Now, that's a very serious charge.
How about the Internal Revenue Service?
Don't change the subject, Ed.
Wait a minute. I asked you. Let's address
one thing. Why can't we talk about various organs of the government?
I want you to answer.
Because you can't answer the question, that's why.
Because I want you to answer one question at a time. Like Nixon, Hillary has used FBI files against her enemies. I think that's a very, very serious charge. Would you characterize that as a serious charge?
I certainly would. And I would say that there are many publications who have said the exact same thing.
Name one that has any...
The New York Times, for one.
Said
the Washington
Post. No, it's never... Baloney.
The New York Times... You mean William Safire wrote that? Is that who you're talking about? Because he had no evidence for it either.
Well, you think, Sapphire is a congenital liar?
I do. I think I've said it many times in print. He said a lot of things about Hillary Clinton that were totally wrong. He predicted that
she would
be indicted and said he would eat crow if she wasn't. And she wasn't.
Well, but he did eat the crow, and I saw it. Okay, let's turn to page 188 and Sua Arafat and the hug and Hillary's step-grandfather. Would you like to correct the record on that?
Yeah, one should have gone before the other, and that was a mistake.
Okay, now, what was the significance of that mistake, do you think?
Well, I think that Hillary was trying to position herself with the Jewish voters in New York. I think we can all agree on that.
But what you said was...
Unlike every other politician you
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. What you
well,
said...
Well, she had a particular problem, which was that she was perceived by many Jewish voters, I think Mr. Connison even would admit to this, as not being sufficiently pro-Israeli, pro-Israel.
Well, but what you do is you try to draw a cause and effect. You say that...
I said that that was, in fact, a chronological mistake. She discovered her grandfather, great-grandfather, grandfather, step-grandfather had been partly Jewish, then she went to the Middle East. That's true.
Let me read what you wrote. At the end of Mrs. Arafat's speech, Hillary applauded enthusiastically, then gave Sua Arafat a big hug and kiss.
Is that true?
The photo...
Is that true, Joe?
Let me read the thing, and then you can respond. The photo of the two women kissing, which played around the world, sowed serious doubts about Hillary in the minds of many Jewish voters. When Hillary realized that she had gotten herself in a jam with Jewish voters, she suddenly turned up a long-lost Jewish step-grandfather... An announcement. Okay, that was dismissed by many.
This is such sloppy work.
Well, hang on, I want.
No. But what I'm saying
to
is,
respond.
Yeah, and Ed, but what I'm saying is that the chronology there is there for a reason. You're saying that she suddenly discovered this because of the hug.
This is a chronological mistake in the book, and I've admitted to it.
Okay. How about the LAX thing? The haircut that supposedly held up traffic at LAX.
Mm-hmm.
Now you know that's not true, right?
No, I don't know that's not true.
Again, because you didn't do any reporting. That story was debunked at the time that it came out, 12 years ago. I mean, it's just astonishing to me how little work was put into this book in terms of actually trying to establish whether any of the stuff that you've written here is true.
So you're saying, Joe, that the president did not hold up traffic at LAX?
I'm saying that not only would I say that, but that's the established fact that's been reported after that story came out. In the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, the FAA made it very clear that not one flight was held up as a result of that.
Well, Joe...
And that was established a long time ago.
You and I are reading different newspapers, I think.
No, it's not a matter of reading different newspapers. It's a matter of what the Federal Aviation Administration said about the incident. It was debunked at the time.
Do you want to read what the St. Louis Post-Dispatch said?
Well, if you'd like to read it, it's your show.
Well, okay. The story was that planes were kept circling as President Bill Clinton had his hair clipped on Air Force One at Los Angeles Airport. This is 1993, last month. The haircut... by Beverly Hills stylist Christoph became such a metaphor for perceived White House arrogance that the president himself felt compelled to apologize for the reported flight delays. But the reports were wrong. According to the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, records obtained through the Freedom of Information Act, the haircut May 18th caused no significant delays of regular scheduled passenger flights, no circling planes, no traffic jams on runways, commuter airlines that fly routes routinely affected by the president's haircut confirmed that they had no record of delays, etc., etc., etc.
What's peculiar to me is you don't seem to care whether you get these things right or not.
What's peculiar to me, Mr. Connison, is that you're still stuck back in 1993 instead of 2005.
No, you this were writing. Book, you were writing about something that happened in 1993.
Yeah, but this book is about whether Hillary Clinton is qualified by virtue of her character to be president of the United States.
Let me ask you a question, Edward Klein, and that is, when you have so many errors that accumulate, why should we take your interpretation seriously?
Well, but I dispute that there are so many errors accumulating.
Well, let's ask about another one. There's a woman you name in this book named Nancy Petrofesa, who you say was rumored to be Hillary's lesbian lover.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Now, there are two things about that. Well, I don't know if it's true or not.
Rumored?
The rumors are...
Right.
There were rumors,
yeah, those
yes.
are great journalistic standards, but you misspell her name throughout the book. Did you know that?
Well, do you know that three other authors have also misspelled her
yes,
name?
Yes, I figured they must have, because that's where you got it from.
Well, I certainly didn't get it from the other two who spelled it differently than I did.
Her
name
got
appears
it.
In Gail Sheehy's book.
Right. Is that where you
Hillary.
Got it? Is
it
that where you
appears,
got it?
It appears in
is that where you got
Roger
it from?
Morris's book.
Right. Is that where you got it?
And it also appears in David Moranis's book.
So you're a terrible reporter, but a good stenographer.
All three of these writers spelled her name in three different ways. I'm sorry that I miss.
Did you try to find
E instead of an A?
Well, let me ask you something. Did you try to find her so you could ask her about this rumor?
Of course I did.
You did?
Of course.
And you had trouble because
you tried with all the different.
You
tried with all the different spellings.
No, I
guess not.
I tried to reach her, and in fact, left messages for her.
Really, where?
Where she lives?
Which okay. is where's that?
Listen, Joe, I don't have her address.
You
in
have
front
no
of me.
Idea where she lives. And you're lying right now.
I'm not lying, Joe.
Yeah, you
okay,
are.
Okay, look.
I'd like to go back to one of the.
No, I want to go back to something.
Can all I, right, you can.
Can I?
Go ahead.
Melanie Vermeer.
Vermeer.
Yeah.
Who is Melanie Vermeer?
She was her chief of staff for a while.
Yeah. You know what?
There is no person named Melanie Vermeer. There's Milan Vermeer, who you refer to as mannish looking, which she's not, but. Her name is Milan, M-E-L-A-N-N-E.
Now, I know Milan.
Now, since you don't know the first name of her chief of staff, why should anybody think that you know anything at all about Hillary Clinton?
Well, I want to go to...
Oh, no, let him.
Please let him respond.
I don't think the question is worth my responding.
Because you don't know, right? You don't know.
No.
You didn't know her real name.
She was referred to as Melanie to me many, many times. And
right, really?
I think that's how...
No one calls her Melanie.
Well, I think that's how a lot of people refer to her.
Nobody calls her that.
Not only do I know Milan, I know her husband. And I have to take offense on calling her mannish, because I know Milan, and I think she's a good-looking woman. And let's say, Ed, someone referred to your wife in a book as Simeon, say.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Would you, which, by the way, I doubt your wife is Simeon looking. I'm sure that she's very beautiful. Because you're a very manly looking man. You're very heterosexual looking, I must say. In the back of the book, you look like you're in really good shape.
I have a feeling that he's never seen Milan Vermeer, whose name he doesn't know. Have you ever seen her?
No, I have not.
But she's mannish looking to you, even though you've never seen
her. She has been described to me that way, yes.
She's been... But who described her to you that way?
Several people who worked knew her.
Who knew her as Melanie.
Yes, who called her Melanie to me.
Well, maybe they knew someone else. This could all just be another case of terrible reporting and mistaken identity.
There is a Melanie who is used to be a male. And is a tennis player.
You know, Ed, you've been a reporter for a long time, I know, or at least purporting to be a journalist. Isn't it true that the first thing you learn when you're starting to be a journalist is to spell the names right?
No, come on.
It's such a silly comment, Joe, that it's beneath...
You got a lot of them wrong.
I got some of them wrong, but I'm sure you've misspelled names in your career.
I try to correct them, and
well,
I didn't pretend...
I will try to correct these in my second edition.
Okay,
third and fourth edition.
Okay, let's go to your motivation. You write, isn't it Dr., or you said, I'm sorry, to Salon, isn't it Dr. Johnson who said that any writer who doesn't write for money is a fool? What I do for a living is write popular nonfiction, and the more popular it is, the more books I sell, and the more money I make. Now, that, I write books too, and I just got to tell you that that's not my motivation.
No, you're a political analyst. I'm not.
Oh, okay.
You're a political person. I'm a biographer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference.
And do you think that maybe some of these conservatives who are reacting to the book, like Peggy Noonan and John Podoretz and others,
mm-hmm.
are reacting because it feels like you're just cashing out here?
No. I don't think that's the reason. If you'll let me answer, I'll answer that question.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think there's a great deal of confusion on the part of the conservatives how to deal with Hillary. They don't know whether to deal with her directly and in a forcible manner, because the last time they tried that with the Clintons during the whole Whitewater and impeachment and Broglio, they were criticized for going overboard and for being too extreme, and they felt they were burned by that experience. So they have recently been cozying up to her and debating how they're going to handle her. And I think this book, which I've written, is a book that could be written about a man. In other words, it takes Hillary Clinton seriously, and it treats her as I would have treated a male subject of a biography. And there's a great deal of concern on the part of conservatives that this is going to turn her into a victim and make her stronger than ever. So that's the fundamental reason there's been this split among conservatives about this book.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ed. And I will say that John Podoretz did write, the headline on his thing was Smear for Profit. So I think that he actually does believe that, that you did this for money, which actually you do say that that's why you write books. So, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I know that this couldn't have been fun, because it really was us ganging up on you, so I really appreciate it. And, you know, talk to Adrian, because I really did tell him that Joe was going to be here. Thank you, really, honestly, thank you for coming on. You're welcome. And we'll be back with the Al Franken Show.